Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Based on figures from the National Department of Health, the staggering number of over 107,000 non-emergency or elective surgeries were put on the back burner during the COVID-19 pandemic. But the issue is, challenges in addressing surgical backlogs were there long before COVID. Professor Catherine Chu, director of the Center for Global Surgery at Stellenbosch University's Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences, says that compared to infectious diseases like HIV, TB, and COVID-19, surgical conditions and care are not a major priority in the public health system. Professor Catherine Chu, welcome.
Thank you, Susie, for having me.
Pleasure. You point out that at the nub of this problem is that there has, up until now, not been much of a national strategy or a plan in terms of, let's put it this way, surgical procedures. Is that a correct understanding?
Yes, and thank you for the question, Shafiq. So, I mean, surgical conditions are about a third of the burden of disease globally, and that includes here in South Africa. So trauma, for example, road traffic accidents, broken bones, as well as emergency conditions such as appendicitis and the need for cesarean section are all included in surgical care. And, you know, up until now, I think COVID has highlighted a real weakness in our national healthcare system, and that surgical care hasn't really been a big part of the strategy of the national or the provincial government. Surgery was never really considered as part of public health care or primary health care. It was pretty much only considered care at the tertiary or the really specialized hospital.
Right. Now, I mean, that obviously has created problems. I do believe in about 2019, you are part of a technical working group that was given the mandate to look at a national safe surgical care program. In other words, to write a national surgical plan. How far is that plan down the road?
Yes, thank you for asking. In 2015 already, the National Department of Health recognized the importance of creating this national surgical plan. And I should say surgical care encompasses anesthesia and obstetrics as well. All the specialties that provide surgical care, and all different healthcare cadres, such as the nurses, the doctors, all of whom work together as a team. And whilst we have a technical working group and even a MAC, a Ministerial Advisory Committee, the work is going a little bit slowly because there isn't dedicated funding from National Health Department or Treasury as of yet to work on these conditions. Now, of course, most of us here in South Africa have heard of conditions like HIV/AIDS, which over the last two decades has really been prioritized with a lot of the money has been focused. And of course, now recently, COVID has really taken the front seat. But I think that COVID pandemic, if anything beneficial to come out of it at all, is just to highlight now the importance of surgical care, because now we have dire backlogs, as you said, in elective surgery.
Now, there have been some strong recommendations and some strong solutions put up. The first one that I notice is to devolve or to delegate surgical care procedures to smaller district hospitals, as opposed to sending all surgical procedures to the big city hospitals. This to me sounds like quite a good idea. I mean, a lot of minor surgical procedures, I'm sure, can be done on the ground at the smaller hospitals.
Yes, Shafiq. So, I mean, as you say, that the urban tertiary hospitals in the public sector have been the ones providing the bulk of surgical care up to now, but it is clear that there are not enough theater time or staff to provide the care for all those patients waiting. And also for a lot of people, especially those living in more rural areas outside the big cities, they have to travel really far. And that also poses problems in terms of affordability for travel and other associated costs of their care. Now, the district hospital has been a focus of what we call essential and emergency surgical care, especially on the international front. The World Health Organization has said that district hospitals should be providing, as you say, that more basic package. Here in South Africa, like in many other countries in Africa, though, the district hospital up to now has not been equipped to provide that type of care. The most obvious sort of first challenge is that specialists, surgeons, anesthetists, obstetricians don't usually work in district hospitals. The care there is provided more by family physicians, medical officers, community service doctors. And up to now, surgery and anesthesia has not always been a core part of their training.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly throws up some questions. I mean, how difficult or how easy would it be to devolve at least minor surgical procedures to our district hospitals? I mean, look, I'm not a medical expert, but I mean, to me, it seems it is something that could be done. But obviously, you would know all the details or the demographics of how one would actually execute a plan like that.
Yes, I do think it's possible, but I think it requires a real systems approach thinking rather than just, you know, for example, just increasing a surgical workforce. Because in order to provide surgical care, there has to be good radiology. So a lot of surgical physicians need x-rays to diagnose the problem or CT scans or ultrasound. A good laboratory system. So many surgeries might require emergency blood products. And so the district hospitals would need to be equipped for that. Of course, the recovery after surgery sometimes requires specialized care and high care, and district hospitals don't always provide those things. And so I think that it is definitely possible. Other countries do so already. And also just to mention that much of the surgical care, the basic surgical care in many countries, is not provided by specialists. Even here in South Africa, the majority of cesarean sections are not done by obstetricians, for example, and have been shown to have safe, so good quality outcomes from that. But I think that the government would just need to have a coordinated plan to be able to strategize how we're going to, as you say, devolve the care to district hospitals.
I mean, in the media, I mean, we come across this a lot, that when we discuss medical issues in South Africa, one of the biggest things that comes up from medical staff themselves is staff shortages. Theatre nurses, most of our theatre nurses are working in the Gulf. They're not here, for an example. Would you agree that the best way to beef up the surgical workforce is, number one, to unfreeze a number of posts, and just to make it a little bit more attractive for South Africans to stay in the country as opposed to going offshore?
Yes, absolutely. I think those are definitely part of the solution. And I'm glad that you mentioned operating theater nurses, because sometimes they are not always highlighted in the staff shortages, and they absolutely, absolutely need to be supported. So more funding for them, more training, and to make those positions desirable. Because I think that if it is more attractive to work abroad because A, there are no posts in the public sector, or the salaries are not as competitive, and, you know, perhaps the working conditions are also very stressful, then the desire to stay isn't really there. But I have no doubt that our district hospitals and our regional hospitals as well, who do already a lot of the surgical care but could do more, could do this. Because I would like to use the example of HIV care and antiretrovirals. There was a time, I'm sure you remember, Shafiq, I don't know if you're as old as I am, but at the time when we thought that antiretrovirals could only be provided by infectious disease doctors at the most specialized hospitals. And now almost every clinic initiates care. And so I do think it just requires a little bit of a paradigm shift. And a strategy to be able to provide that care.
And talking about paradigm shifts, the other issue is co-opting private sector resources. I know that Gift to the Givers, for example, has been helping Kruger to try and crack some of their backlog. I know this week in Lerotong Hospital in West Rand, another group of NGOs helped with 80 cataract operations. So we're seeing quite a bit of on the edges of private sector cooperation, etc., etc. But, I mean, how far do we go in terms of bringing private sector resources into making up the backlog of all the surgical procedures and having a workable system?
Well, I do think that contracting out to the private sector is certainly a short-term solution, and perhaps even a longer term one, because the private sector is already set up in their facilities for all those things like I mentioned, you know, diagnostics like radiology, laboratories, the the ward care, the recovery unit in the theater itself, the equipment, and certainly the human resources. And they overall are not as taxed as the public sector. I think that, you know, in COVID, the first time the private and the public sector really cooperated well is when we bought out beds in the private sector for the ICU for COVID care patients. And I think that that did work really well. I think with the coming of the NHI, the National Health Insurance, you know, there won't be sort of private and public care, if you will, for surgical conditions. There will be, you know, conditions that need to be treated, be covered in the essential benefits package. And, you know, where that's going to be treated will then depend on who can provide the resources. So I think already exploring sort of or crossing the divide between the public and private is certainly a solution short-term and possibly even long-term.
Professor Chu, the final question. It looks like everybody knows what the answers, what the solutions are. So how do we take the next step? Is it entirely up to government or is it up to us? I mean, how do we take the next step?
So I think it's a multi-pronged approach. I think that for one thing, that the reason why the HIV movement was so successful in improving care for that group of patients was patient advocacy or advocacy, as we say here in South Africa. So people with surgical conditions or patient groups that represent people with surgical conditions, certainly if they make some noise and advocate and say that this care is really important to them, I think that's really helpful. I think that the professional associations as well, the surgical anesthesia, obstetric, for example, and many of the surgical subspecialists, if they also agitate, make some noise about the importance of providing care and how large the backlogs are and what the consequences are to the people that they treat, I think that's really important. I think that surgeons have never spoken the language of public health officials up to now. And I think that's our own fault. And we are now slowly becoming educated into how we can get our point across effectively so that government will also listen. And so I think the final thing, of course, though, it does have to come from national support as well as provincial support. In some provinces, I think, because of the backlog, are taking notice more. And so I think that if a few provinces can lead the way and have specific plans, then that would also help to kind of show as investment case, how this could work.
Professor Catherine Chu, Director of the Center for Global Surgery at Stellenbosch University, giving us some insights into how everybody, I'll put it that way, is trying to tackle the amount of surgeries that we have to catch up because of COVID. But of course, it was an existing problem before. But at least there's awareness, and let's hope it goes into a good space. Professor Catherine Chu, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Shuki.